Hello, I'm Adrian Rodriguez. This is number 0311, the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0311. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, Susan Olsen, best known as Cindy Brady on the hit sitcom The Brady Bunch. So many wild rumors have been spread over the years about her. What's the most outlandish thing she's heard?
Well, probably that I'm dead, or that I'm in porn. The porn thing was going on for a long time. Being dead was really when I was a kid, and there actually was a girl named Susan Olsen that died, and then when Vanessa Jones, who played Buffy on Family Affair, when she OD'd, then the rumor started up that it was me. So I always thought that was kind of cool. It made me feel like Paul McCartney. I'm the dead Brady. Yeah.
Entertainment Weekly senior writer Anthony Bresnahan, author of the coming-of-age novel Brutal Youth. What was high school like for him?
I went to a school where hazing was sanctioned, and you were told coming in, like, go along, get along, and it'll be easier for you. And I saw a lot of really nasty behavior, a lot of awful cruelty, and then you get older and you realize, well, that's not limited to high school. I thought it would make kind of an interesting story about the darker side of human nature, this sort of will to power over other people, a way to keep ourselves from being at the bottom of the totem pole is to push somebody else down below.
Stuart Nullman is in with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman, and on this edition of Book Banter, we get the filthy truth from comedian Andrew Dice Clay. So get ready for the Dice Man. He's coming up soon on the Stuff File Program.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0311, was photographer Adrian Rodriguez, who dreams in color but lives in black and white. You can check out his website at arodphoto.com. That's arodphoto.com. And thank you very much, Adrian, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File Program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A Texas man was wounded after he fired a gun at an armadillo in his yard, and the bullet ricocheted back and hit him in the face. Cass County Sheriff Larry Rowe said the man, who was not identified, went outside of his home in Marietta, Texas at around 3 a.m. He spotted the armadillo on his property and opened fire. His wife was in the house. He went outside and took his .38 revolver and shot three times at the armadillo, Rowe said. The animal's hard shell deflected at least one of the three bullets, which then struck the man's jaw. The man was airlifted to a nearby hospital where his jaw was wired shut. The status of the animal is unknown. We didn't find the armadillo, the sheriff said. Well, did you listen closely to hear any armadillo laughter near the guy's house? And by the way, what is the reason for anyone to go outside their house at 3 a.m. to shoot at an armadillo? Was the armadillo partying loudly? Anyway, unfortunately, now that this guy's mouth is wired shut for a while, we won't be able to hear the explanation for his stupidity. Bottom line, this is a case of carmadillo. Yes. Meanwhile, if you are going to murder someone for your lover, you should at least make sure you're murdering the right person. A precaution the young man apparently did not take in this next story. 41-year-old Carlita Deshaun Phillips of South Carolina was estranged from her husband, and she found comfort in the arms of 17-year-old Tavarius Settles. But Phillips wasn't satisfied with her illicit affair. She wanted her husband out of the way, and she wanted her lover to take care of it for her. Unfortunately, Settles did not make a very good hitman. Police said that instead of his lover's estranged husband, Settles killed her husband's brother, 31-year-old Jameel Phillips, by mistake, ambushing him in front of his home. The prosecutor said that Carlita was convicted of accessory before the fact of murder and soliciting a minor to commit a felony. She was sentenced to life in prison. The teen was sentenced to 45 years behind bars. Well, Tavarius can go visit Carlita when he gets out of jail when he's 63 years old, assuming Carlita is still alive and still pining for him. Yes. Reuters reported in early July that a big loser in the nuclear pact between Iran and six world powers was, since all negotiators have gone home to sell the deal, the brothel industry of Vienna, Austria, which hosted that final round. With so many male, mostly diplomats in town, for two stressful months, business had been robust, especially compared to the previous round of notoriously expensive Lausanne, Switzerland meetings that took place. So, what have we learned here, boys and girls? Apparently, hookers are cheaper in Vienna. Now, there's a travel brochure slogan for you, huh? Yeah. Well, it's no secret that sports fans can be a devoted bunch. Take Paul and Kelly Godreau, or Goodreau, I should say, of Watertown, Massachusetts. The lovebirds were married on May 9th, but have yet to go on their honeymoon. How come? Because of Deflategate. We want to support Tom Brady, Paul told WBZ at Patriots training camp. This is what we decided right when the suspension went down. When we got married, we talked about it. I married into it, Kelly confirmed. Clearly, Kelly and Paul, by the way, who has faces of Brady, Bill Belichick, and Teddy Bruschi tattooed to his upper right leg. Clearly, Kelly and Paul are very serious about their mission to stand firm for their beloved quarterback. The couple did say they will honeymoon in Bermuda once the suspension is over and Brady is back on the field. Yeah, I'm waiting to see when the divorce papers are filed in that one. And seriously, don't you think the best time for the supposedly happy couple to go on a honeymoon is right now, so that they'll be back in time to see Brady play? If they only go when he's back on the field, they better hope that Bermuda's hotel rooms have complete sports packages on their cable plan. And we go to New Zealand for our next story. A young wedding guest desperate to catch the bride's bouquet was caught on camera dropping a baby to die for the flowers. The video filmed at a wedding in New Zealand features a young girl holding the baby among a group of women waiting to catch the bouquet. The bride throws the bouquet and the young girl quickly drops the baby in favor of diving backward in an attempt to snatch the flowers out of the air. The young girl is unsuccessful, having lost out to a much taller wedding guest, and picks up the seemingly uninjured baby. The video's description says the baby is the young girl's sister and was not harmed in the filming. Considering the symbolism of what catching the bouquet stands for, perhaps this young lady should be banned from taking part in such events in the future. Yeah, completely. Get her out of the dating pool while we're at it as well. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, we've all heard the phrase, there's an app for that. It seems that there is an app for just about everything out there. Among the health and fitness apps for computers and smartphones are sex tracking programs to document the variety of acts and positions, degrees of frenzy, and lengths of sessions via an on-bed motion detector, and menstrual trackers aimed at males to help judge their partner's fertility, but also her predicted friskiness and likelihood of orgasm. I'm also guessing that also calculates knowing when to run for cover. Several have chart and graph-making potential for data, a noise level, average thrust frequency, duration, etc. And of course, the highlight of many of the apps is their ability to create a score to rank performance, even encouraging comparisons across a range of populations and geography. Sociologist Deborah Lupton's app research was summarized in the July Harper's Magazine. Yeah, can't you just see guys at a bar showing off the results and comparing notes with their buddies? I mean, you know, how competitive guys can be, I wouldn't be surprised if ESPN comes up with an all-new fantasy league with these results. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? We all remember little Cindy Brady, the youngest girl on the hit series The Brady Bunch. She was played by Susan Olsen. Well, there was an article on the People magazine website recently with the headline, Cindy Brady Spills, Susan Olsen Reveals the Brady Bunch's Darkest Secrets. Well, were they really that dark? We're joined on the line right now by Susan Olsen. She's on the line from California. Hi, Susan.
Hello.
Nice to have you back on the program.
Nothing like sensationalism, right?
Nothing like sensationalism. Well, you know, it's funny because the one thing I find very interesting about television casts is that we, the general public, we grow up, we go to school, we go to different schools, we graduate, we get jobs, we leave jobs, and sometimes we leave the folks that we knew behind because that's what happens in life. But we watch television families and we think that, oh, the Brady Bunch, you know, those that are still surviving, they must be all together right now. They must be in communication all the time. And I'm assuming that's not the case.
Right, because, you know, they have to be a real family.
Yeah.
Although, in our case, it's true. I mean, we don't live together. We don't feel compelled even to send each other Christmas cards. But we stay in touch. And, for some reason or another, there are always these things that come up that bring us together, and we all have a really good relationship.
Now, this article that I said was in on People.com, one of the things it went on about was that, you know, the hookups on the show that, for instance, it mentioned that you and Mike Lookinland hooked up at the tender age of, what, 9?
Yeah, well, 8. but it's so ridiculous that it's, I don't know. Do people have that much amnesia? Because I didn't say anything, well, except for the pot growing. I didn't say anything that wasn't already said in Barry Williams' book, Growing Up Brady. You know, and everybody had fits over it then. And, but it was kind of overshadowed by the inference that Barry had dated Florence, when if you read the book, you'd find out, no, they just went out to dinner, and Barry had a crush on her, you know, and it was completely innocent. But, you know, I mean, we were kind of stuck in a studio. We didn't have any other options. So, you know, when you start getting interested in the opposite sex, there's nobody else around. But we all went back to regular school during our hiatus. So our options opened up then.
Yeah. If you just do a Google search, and again, these stories come up in regular fashion at regular intervals. And I'm just wondering, through the years, especially nowadays with the internet, what's the most bizarre, outlandish thing you've read about yourself?
Well, probably that I'm dead or that I'm in porn. So that the porn thing was going on for a long time. Being dead was really when I was a kid, and there actually was a girl named Susan Olsen that died. And then when Anessa Jones, who played Buffy on Family Affair, when she OD'd, then the rumor started up that it was me. So, but I always thought that was kind of cool. It made me feel like Paul McCartney. I'm the dead Brady. Yay. And if you play any of our albums backwards, you can hear Barry saying, "I bury Cindy." You know.
you laugh about it and you have fun about it. I've had the opportunity to talk to a lot of child stars, and you know, you get basically half and half. There are those who love the entire experience and enjoy the memories and enjoy what they're doing now, and there are those who weren't too crazy about the experience. What camp do you fall into?
Probably the first one that you said, although that might be a little bit more unusual. What I find is there are those who hated it and are very angry about it, and there are those who really loved it and they still want to do it, and so they're not really happy with where they are now because they still want to be an actor. And unfortunately, one really good way of destroying your career is to be a successful child actor. And then there are those who hated it but still want to do it. And then there are those who loved it and decided they preferred other things and moved on and have happy memories. That's where I fall in.
I've also found it interesting that a lot of child actors who do not go on to stay in the business as actors become very successful on the other side of the camera. There are a lot of directors and cinematographers who gravitated to the other side of the camera when they became adults.
Absolutely. And in fact, you know, I have very few regrets in life, but if I had anything to do over again, I think that when I was young, I would have gone into the cinema department, you know, trying to be behind the scenes. I would have gone to USC and gone to the film school. But, you know, for some crazy reason, I thought my mom wanted me to be an actress, and I don't know, she kept telling me, I was a good artist, and she kept saying, oh, art is so unstable, and there's so many artists. Yeah, right, be an actress, because that's such a stable thing to do. I think she had her logic a little off, and I studied for quite a while before I realized, I don't really like this, and this isn't really what I want to do. And yet, I find myself teaching. And, you know, I had a good experience as a kid, and I feel sort of a responsibility to try to help kids who think they want to do this, you know, try to help them to have a good experience.
Well, one of the questions I usually ask former child stars, and I know you're a mom, is would you want your child to be a child actor?
No. Mostly because I think if he really had talent for it, I'd want him to wait until he was 18 so that he didn't destroy his career, so that when he was an adult and he really needed to make a living off of it, then he could. my son actually has quite a bit of acting talent, but he doesn't think it's cool, and he'd rather be a musician.
So did he grow up watching Mom on TV, or is that
He didn't like the show.
He didn't like the show.
He didn't like it. He thought it was stupid. He liked South Park. you know, it's a shame, because I really do think that the show's a good thing to show to kids. I think it teaches a lot of great lessons, and unfortunately, it was too tainted for him because he couldn't watch and get into the show. He just kept laughing at, Mom, you're so stupid. And look, oh, there's Aunt Eve when she was little. Oh, she was so cute. And he loves Robbie Rist, his cousin Oliver, because Robbie is one of my best friends and one of the coolest guys on earth, and my son adores him. And so he just couldn't relate to it as a show. It was like kind of like home movies where we're all acting really silly.
Robbie is one of the coolest people on the planet. We've had him on the show several times, and it's always great to talk to him. Your son, you say your son's into music. He must really love Robbie because, of course, Robbie's a musician.
Absolutely. He's got an autographed copy of a vinyl of the Sharknado theme. And the fact that I think Robbie, he's played with bands. I mean, he's played with bands that my son knows, that my son knew on his own. So, yeah, Robbie's a hero.
So bring us up to date. What are you doing these days? I know you did a radio show for a while.
I'm still doing it. I'll be doing it tonight. Two Chicks Talking Politics on latalkradio.com, 7 p.m. Pacific Time. I teach acting for kids, and now I actually have some adults too. At a place called Vibe Performing Arts Studios in Santa Clarita, California. I have a line of candy that looks just like animal crap, and it's to help raise funds for animal welfare. Candy puppy poop. And featuring my artwork on the boxes, and go to your local Rocket Fizz candy store and demand it, because they will be carrying it.
Excellent. And when you get to teach children as actors, do you have a sixth sense if they're doing it for the right reasons? And do you kind of read the parents to see if they're doing it for the right reasons?
Absolutely, yeah. And fortunately, where I'm teaching now, I teach in two different settings. There's a more professional one, and that's building right now. It's a new company. Where they definitely want to do it professionally. And it's an entirely different attitude in teaching. At Vibe, what I really prefer are the kids that are here taking acting class because, well, maybe after this session I'll take Taekwondo, or the guitar classes were full. They don't really have any intentions of doing it for real, and their parents don't. In fact, some of my best students, the parents say, no way. I do not want them to have an agent until they're 18. I don't want them doing this as a kid. So I've, just because of the nature of the people around this area, I have not really run into really pushy stage parents, maybe a couple. And, yeah, I mean, I can smell it like a bloodhound. When people have the wrong intentions. And, of course, the kids always have the wrong intentions, you know. they want to be stars, and they have no idea how much work it is. But you know, hopefully every single one of these kids, you know, they may not walk out with an agent or a contract, but they're going to be better at expressing themselves, and they're going to have more confidence after having one of my classes.
Well, I'm glad to hear you're keeping busy. I'm glad to hear we're able to cover some of the misconceptions. We now know you're not dead, you're not in porn, the Brady Bunch still like each other, and all is merry in life, which is good to hear.
It is, isn't it?
Thank you very much for talking to us.
Thank you.
Susan Olson. You can check out her website at susanolson.net. And, of course, you'll find the link on my website at thestufffile.com. Just go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0311. And you'll find it.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander's show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey. Your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands, just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Choosy mothers choose the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. If your mother didn't choose it for you, well, I guess she just doesn't love you.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to author Anthony Bresnahan. His new book is called Brutal Youth. Plus, Stuart Nolman is in with another edition of Book Banter. And, of course, there's an Idiot of the Day coming your way a little later on, and lots more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, Maryland State Delegate Arianna Kelly was charged with trespassing and indecent exposure in June after she arrived at her ex-husband's home to drop off their kids and learned that his girlfriend was inside. According to police, she started banging on the door and ringing the bell repeatedly, and aware that her husband had a camera trained on the doorway, she faced it, exposed her breasts, and shook them, one in each hand, towards the lens. Eventually, she dared an officer to arrest her. The Washington Post reported that Kelly is a member of the legislative task force studying maternal mental health issues. Yeah, I'm going out on a limb to say that perhaps she might not be best qualified for that job. And we have a couple of stories that could easily be headlined driving ironies. Number one, an 87-year-old man taking his license renewal test, his driving test in Deerfield, Illinois in June, accidentally crashed into the driving license office based on the usual brake accelerator confusion problem that plagues apparently so many seniors these days. Neither he nor the examiner were injured. And story number two, an 83-year-old man driving around Cape Coral, Florida in May suffered a fatal heart attack at the wheel, and the uncontrolled car came to rest in shrubbery, ringing the Florida Heart Associates building. Yes, that's irony indeed. If these stories aren't a sign of a higher power who has a sense of humor, then I don't know what is. And we have a couple of items here where slogans really drive the idea home. Story number one, a court in Lincoln, Nebraska, which had already sent Paul Boy to prison for at least 10 years for shooting his girlfriend, ordered him in June to cover her resulting medical bills. The woman had taken a .22 caliber bullet, which left a scar cutting right through her tattoo, which read, "Happiness is a warm gun." Does she still think that's true, by the way? And number two, a task force of Benton, Arkansas police and U.S. Marshals tracked down 26-year-old Tyrion Watson in June after he had spent several days on the lam as a suspect in a shooting. When arrested, he was wearing a t-shirt reading, "You can run, but you can't hide." Gee, I think I can make a lot of money selling t-shirts that have a picture of Watson wearing that t-shirt while in cuffs. Moving right along, mine worker Joshua Clay claimed in a lawsuit that a foreman had twice taunted him for complaining about conditions by restraining him and spray-painting his testicles white. Clay filed against Kilty Mine of Mingo County in West Virginia in July, alleging that the company had forced him to work on the dirty side of a coal dust conversion machine, a practice forbidden by federal regulations, and that when he complained, he was subjected to off-the-books discipline. Oh my, you know, every lawyer in that county must be chomping at the bit to represent this guy. And by the way, the exhibit photographs in the case during the trial should be an eyeful for any potential jury, don't you think? Yeah. Moving right along, we have a couple of items that highlight mangoes. Yes, you heard me right. Mangoes. 64-year-old Josefina Tomatich was arrested in Fort Myers, Florida in June, charged with shooting out the back window of Christopher Ritchie's pickup truck. Ritchie had fetched a perfectly fine-looking mango from the street in front of Tomatich's home, but Tomatich insisted it was hers since it had earlier fallen from her mango tree. An attorney consulted by a local television station said wind-blown mangoes landing on public property is a legal gray area. And story number two, in one of the most successful redresses of grievances in history, the Venezuelan government gave Marlene Ovilio a new apartment in April, only days before, as President Nicolas Maduro toured her neighborhood, she had hurled a mango at him with her phone number on it, hitting him just below the ear. The new president, a man of the people, called her, listened to her story, and ordered a housing upgrade. Well, that brings new meaning to the fruits of her labor, doesn't it? And Kim Stephen Brock was taking an afternoon nap in her Weld County, Colorado home when, as she was quoted as saying, I felt this presence, almost like I could hear footsteps going across my living room. She jumped up and grabbed her pistol. Sure enough, she found herself face to face with a home invasion burglar. Kim held the intruder at gunpoint and waited for sheriff's deputies to arrive. 35-year-old Melanie Romero was not only charged with burglary, she was also charged with child abuse because she brought her three children along. Deputies found them waiting in her car. Romero is suspected in a rash of area burglaries. So, Kim was taking an afternoon nap, and because not everyone works 9 to 5, Romero may end up doing 5 to 9. Karma. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, this is a story that definitely comes under the heading of way too much information. At a charity event in Philadelphia in July, in the course of attempting to set a Guinness Book record for pogo stick workouts, 25-year-old Jack Sexty bounced 88,047 straight times over a 10-hour, 20-minute session to add to his several previous Guinness records. Now, Sexty, who said he was physically uncomfortable at times during the 10-hour ordeal, suggested that he may have inadvertently set yet another pogo record as maybe the only person ever to answer a number two call of nature while pogoing. He explained that a guy had offered to hold a pot underneath him as he jumped and did his business, but Sexty confessed, I couldn't be very accurate aiming for the pot. Yikes. You know, all I have to say is, the guy who volunteered to hold a pot certainly has to be the best friend in the world that anybody could ever have. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Anthony Bresnahan is a senior writer at Entertainment Weekly magazine, one of my favorite publications, but he has also just released a novel entitled Brutal Youth, a coming-of-age story taking place at a Pennsylvania high school that is a dumping ground for delinquents, misfits, and the unlucky. Anthony joins us on the line right now from California to talk about his novel. Hi, Anthony.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks for being on the program with us. You know, when I have a chance to talk to writers, and if you ever talk to them about the writing process, they always usually at some point say, write what you know. So I got to ask you this question. How was high school for you, Anthony?
It was probably similar to everyone who's listening to this. You know, I think those early years are kind of a battleground emotionally and sometimes physically. And I had all these kind of war stories from growing up that I would, you know, sometimes tell my wife, or had these kind of fun, crazy party stories, because the most harrowing times in your life become a good party story once you've got some distance on it. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, it had a happy ending because you're still here, and now you can share this sort of painful saga from when you were a teenager. But yeah, I went to a school where hazing was sanctioned, and you were told coming in, like, go along, get along, and it'll be easier for you. Don't be a bad sport or else suddenly it gets a lot worse. And I saw a lot of really nasty behavior, a lot of awful cruelty. And then you get older and you realize, oh, that's not limited to high school. So I thought it would make kind of an interesting story about the darker side of human nature, this sort of will to power over other people, a way to keep ourselves from being at the bottom of the totem pole is to push somebody else down below. And I just think that's sort of a part of who we are, not necessarily a flattering part. So I had this kind of little adolescent war story to tell.
Mm. Now, you yourself have two young children, correct?
That's right, yeah.
How do you feel about, you know, a book is there forever, so how do you feel about them reading this when they're teenagers?
Well, it's funny, you know, my daughter is, she's almost six, and, you know, I had written a draft of the novel before she was born, and my son, he's younger than her, he's only two right now, but I had, you know, the usual process of soliciting agents and publishers and getting rejected. And, you know, I went through a little bit of that and got pretty downhearted, as most people who try to write a book and get it published do. And, you know, when my wife got pregnant and we were
you know, moving and dealing with this big life change, I kind of put it all off to the side. And I'd say I put it on the back burner, but the burner wasn't even on. I put it in the deep freeze, you know. And then one night I was rocking my daughter to sleep, and I was thinking of this Paul Simon song called "That Was Your Mother," and it's all about, like, that was your mother, that was your father before you were born, and kind of all the crazy things that they used to do before they became mom and dad. I love that song, and I think I was singing it to her as a lullaby. I started to think, like, what is she going to know about her dad back when, before he was dad, before, you know, when I was just me? And I thought, well, you know what, maybe someday she'll read my book, and she'll know what was important to her dad, that it's important to know that the good guys don't always win, but there's victory in just being good. And that, you know, one way to protect yourself from being bullied is to stand up for somebody else who's being pushed around. And I thought, yeah, she'll read that, and she'll know what her dad stood for, and she'll know who I was. And then I thought, I heard this little voice in my head that said, oh, is she going to read your Microsoft Word document? Is she going to read your little binder on the shelf of loose-leaf pages? It really lit the fire in me to get the damn thing published. And from that point on, I was determined to find somebody who believed in it as strongly as I did. And thank goodness, found a publisher in St. Martin's, and I got an agent. And when she's old enough, I definitely would love for her to read it. It's got some stuff in it that I hope she believes, too.
You just mentioned a few moments ago the idea of, if you're being bullied, you know, look for somebody else who's being bullied and help them. I recently saw, I guess it was someplace, you had done a panel, and you described that to a young girl who was in the audience. Tell us a little bit about what was going through your mind and how you felt talking to her about this under those circumstances.
Well, yeah, I've met a lot of kids over the past year who had that experience, where they say, I come home and I tell my mom and dad, and let's be honest, it takes a lot for a kid to come home and tell their mom and dad, I'm being called horrible names at school, or I'm getting beaten up, or they throw me in the dumpster. Like, a lot of adults, we think these things don't happen because the kids would come home and tell the grown-ups, and some grown-up would stop it. The fact is, kids are embarrassed by this stuff. They don't want anybody to know, so they keep it hidden for as long as possible, but every now and then it gets so bad that some kid, and I've talked to a lot of these types of people, boys and girls, ages younger than you would expect, saying, I told my mother and father, we went to the teacher said, boys will be boys, or, you know, it takes two to tango, we've gone to the principal doesn't do anything, what can I do now? And I think this is something I tried to capture in Brutal Youth, the idea that people in authority aren't always there to help you. You know, that just because you have a badge, or you have a sign on your door that says principal, doesn't mean that you always have everyone's best interest at heart. People are sometimes bad at their jobs, and that includes being a bad parent. And I think there are a lot of kids who go through life wondering, why doesn't somebody step in and help me? And they feel really hopeless. And sometimes they lash out, and sometimes they take matters into their own hands and, you know, try to end their suffering. And you hear a lot about kids who try to take their own lives. So I think it's a really sad situation. And so one of the things that I say to the kids is, if you feel like you're friendless and you feel totally alone and you feel like the world is against you, keep an eye out for somebody who's in your same position, because you're not alone. And maybe if you stand up for that person, you know, you might get picked on by the person who's calling names or pushing people around on the school bus. But also, you'll have made a friend, and maybe that person will stick up for you next time. At the very least, I think it's sometimes easier to stand up for somebody else than it is to stand up for our own selves.
A coming-of-age story like Brutal Youth, which is also a dark comedy. I don't want to mention that it's, you know, all depressing all the time. But a story like Brutal Youth, stories like that that are coming-of-age items are often great coming-of-age movies. Do you entitle or foresee your book becoming a film?
Well, I think that would be cool, as somebody who writes about movies for Entertainment Weekly and loves movies.
and it was influenced by movies, I'd love to see somebody, you know, take their shot at it and do like a cover version of a song, do their version of the story. You know, a book has to live as a book first, and, you know, that was how I wrote it. And I'm glad you mentioned the humor, because, yeah, I don't want to, it's not a preachy book. I wanted it to be kind of, like I said, an exciting, treacherous war story, you know, and it's got some, you know, I love the humor that's in something like Breaking Bad or The Sopranos or the show Empire, where in the midst of deep, dark trouble, sometimes it just becomes absurdly funny, you know? And I hope those moments kind of lighten the darkness in the novel. But, you know, if somebody were to try to make it as a movie, heck, I'd buy a ticket to that.
Now, did you actually did you actually get Stephen King to do a cover blurb?
No, I just made that up. That's a Stephen King. No, I'm just joking. That would be really bad. That would be some big, deep, dark trouble right there. Yeah, I was deeply influenced by him, and he's the reason I became a writer, and I think I'm far from the only person who can claim that. When I had the novel coming out, I wrote a letter to him and said, told him a little story about how my grandmother purchased a paperback of his and was trying to encourage me to read by giving me a book I probably shouldn't have had when I was 12 years old. And ever since then, I started writing little ghost stories, you know, as a high school kid trying to be just like him. And 20-some years later, I finally have a book that I think is worth showing to him. And would he be interested in me sending it along? And I didn't know how he would respond, or if he would say, how did you get this email, or how did you get this address? But he very kindly said, sure, you know, you could send along a galley and have your publisher send it. I can't help you be published, but, you know, if it's already being published, you know, I go ahead and send it along, but no promises, right? And that was good enough for me. I was just grateful. The idea that he might even lay eyes on it would mean a lot to me. And, you know, he read it, and one day, out of the blue, tweeted at me about it, and that he had started it, and that he... You know, he was enjoying it, and I just, at that point, I got really nervous. I'm like, I hope he keeps liking it. I hope he continues to enjoy it. And then one day, an email popped up with a subject line blurb, and he gave me this beautiful paragraph and said really lovely things about my story. And tell you what, I've enjoyed a lot of his words over the years, and those are my favorites, though, the ones he wrote for me. So,
and we should—I'm
very grateful to him.
And he's, should mention,
I always say, the world's scariest man is also one of the nicest.
Yeah, and we should mention on the book, it says, "If you thought high school was hell, has Anthony Breznican got a story for you, Stephen King?" You can't do better than that, can you?
And then on the back, he had a few other words to say about it. And I love that he saw some of the humor in the story too. That meant a lot to me.
Excellent. Well, the book is called Brutal Youth. It's written by Anthony Breznican from Entertainment Weekly magazine. I always got to mention that because, again, I think you do great work there. People can check out your website, anthonybreznican.com. And, Anthony, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us. Continued success, especially with this book.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thanks for chatting with me.
Anthony Breznican, author of Brutal Youth. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0311, and you'll find links to Anthony's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. And don't forget to catch Anthony on Entertainment Weekly Radio on Sirius XM. His weekly radio show, Behind the Scenes with Anthony Breznican, is heard Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRico Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. With only a little bit of summer vacation remaining for most kids, many parents are looking for things they can do with the family before school starts again. Well, I have an idea that was suggested to me by a college professor. But don't worry, kids, it has nothing to do with studying. It's a factory tour. Have you ever wondered how the stripes get into candy canes, or how computer chips are made? Maybe you'd rather know how potato chips are made. There are factory tours for all these things. Now, if you've heard me on the radio before, you might have guessed that lawsuits would somehow figure into this story, and you'd be right. That college professor also told me that many factories are discontinuing their tours because of fears over lawsuits. Let's be fair, you don't have to be a college professor or have a PhD to see that lawsuits are changing many of the things that we've taken for granted in America. Many of these fun and educational tours may soon be gone. So don't delay. Take time this summer for a factory tour. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
Hi, this is Wynonna Judd, and you probably don't think of me as a person with an eating disorder. But here's my truth. Eating disorders are real, and they are not just about losing weight. Eating disorders are the way you feel about your body and the way you treat yourself. For years, I have been a compulsive overeater, and it wasn't until its effects threatened my health, my family, and my career that I finally reached out for help. Recovering from an eating disorder is possible, and I'm living proof. But you have to take the first step, so I urge you to visit nationaleatingdisorders.org.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And on this program, we often talk about literary giants. So Stuart Nauman is here once again to talk about this latest tome. What literary giant are we talking about this time, Stuart?
Well, let me tell you, honey. Oh! Does that give you a hint? Because that's...
Unfortunately, it does.
Yeah, well, put it this way. The way his comic persona is and his material, that's the only thing I can do about Andrew Dice Clay, actually.
Yikes.
Without going through the four-letter words. And speaking of Andrew Dice Clay, I first saw him perform in December of 1987 at Caroline's Comedy Club when I was at the South Street Seaport in New York. And, to put it mildly, it was a shock to my system. I mean, he was dubbed the hoodlum of comedy at the time, and nothing prepared me for what I was about to witness. I mean, he was dressed in jeans and his black leather jacket. He arrogantly lit a cigarette and then proceeded to go into his trademark litany of filthy X-rated nursery rhymes, which I cannot repeat here for obvious reasons. And after that, he spent the rest of his headlining set as a sort of angry comedy rant, along with interacting with the members of the audience in an audacious way that was both shocking and swarm-inducing. And throughout that whole set, he was getting a terrific amount of laughs. So I never seen anything like this guy. And, he was readily challenging the boundaries of what stand-up comedy was like at the time. And I just got hooked on this guy. I promoted him to anyone who would listen, who wanted to see someone new in stand-up comedy. Now, by the end of the 80s and by 1990, he was the hottest stand-up comic around. I mean, he had arena shows that he sold out. He was doing TV, a lot of TV, did movies. His first comedy album called Dice was probably one of the best debut albums for a stand-up comedy, for a stand-up comedian. And basically, he was the number one comic around. But 1990, when he was hitting that peak, all of a sudden, he started going that downward spiral. I mean, basically, his material was being criticized for being, as gay bashing, anti-woman. It was also that it was racist. His first film, which was downgraded by 20th Century Fox, Full Speed, his huge premiere at a stadium, and got downgraded to just a few hundred theaters, showing a few hundred theaters. And the tip of the iceberg was when he was asked to host an episode of Saturday Night Live, and then Nora Dunn, who was then one of the cast members, said that because of his, anti-women material, she would not appear on that week's episode. And it was found out later that basically Dunn was doing it as a publicity stunt because she was going to be released as a member of the cast after that season. So basically, 25 years after his meteoric rise and fall in the world of stand-up comedy, Clay has told his story the only way he knows how in his no-holds-barred memoir called, obviously, The Filthy Truth. Now, the impression I got after reading the book is that Clay, who was born Andrew Clay Silverstein, is a person who was born to perform as a comedian, but has remained resilient and uncompromising through the roller coaster ride that has been his life and career. Now, some may be turned off by Clay and what his comic persona may represent, but it gave me a whole new respect for this person. Now, although he didn't have a difficult upbringing, Clay was brought up in a close family atmosphere. He called his immediate family the Originals, and he grew up in Brooklyn, which he learned from his parents, especially his mother, of not being afraid to speak up for yourself no matter how much of it is laced with profanity. Now, Clay completely chronicles his rise, fall, and resurrection in the comedy world, in a narrative style that is a combination of Andrew Clay Silverstein and the Dice Man. From his beginnings at New York clubs, performing his Nutty Professor routine, to his beginnings shaping the Dice Man persona at the Comedy Store in L.A., to his brash, fearless way he confronted people in order to succeed, to how Rodney Dangerfield and his Nothing Goes Right HBO special basically was a turning point for him. And plus the joys and trappings that fame brought with him, including a friendship with Sylvester Stallone. Now, The Filthy Truth, basically I found it was a brash, honest memoir of a Brooklyn kid who started as a process server for his father's business to a stand-up comedian who gained virtual rock star status by saying what he wanted to say, no matter what the consequences were. So you may be shocked by this, but this is a purely Andrew Dice Clay, you know, the way you expect him to be when you read this book.
Well, you know, I'm going to disagree a little bit. I think he didn't go on stage and say anything he wanted to say. He went on stage and said anything Andrew Dice Clay wanted to say. And by that, I mean, he's very similar, a forerunner, if you will, to what Stephen Colbert did on the Colbert Report. It was all character. It, you know, we know that Stephen Colbert, as we've seen on the Colbert Report, that's not him.
Yeah, it's basically, you know, I bet you the real Stephen Colbert is probably a liberal, but he's going under the guise of a conservative, you know, news show host.
And the Andrew Dice Clay that we saw on stage, that's not him either.
No, I mean, basically, that's the Dice Man. That's the persona, you know, that he invented and he developed over the years, you know, in the clubs of New York and L.A., you know, that sort of, you know, that his audience is just gobbled up. You know, people want to be as brash and straightforward as the Dice Man, but they couldn't. So they, you know, they basically, you know, followed what Clay had to do. I mean, basically it was – so basically the book is told, you know, with a little bit of Andrew Clay Silverstein and a little bit of the Dice Man.
Hmm. The only way nowadays you can get away with saying whatever you want is if you have a lot of money and you run for the Republican Party nominee. So anyway, this book is entitled?
The Filthy Truth by Andrew Dice Clay. Or Andrew Clay Silverstein, if you want. It's published by Touchstone Books, and it's $32.50.
And other books you recommend in this genre?
Well, there's two very brash and very straightforward, honest comedian memoirs that I've read over the years. One is Lenny Bruce's How to Talk Dirty and Influence People, which was published in 1963. Terrific book. And Artie Lang, he wrote his first book, Too Fat to Fish. Is another very brutally honest look at a comedian who was on, you know, who's also, you know, just as controversial as Clay, maybe not in the same scale, but let the excesses get to him, and yet somehow he survived and is still surviving in showbiz. See, where, you know, usually you'd be thrown out for if you did half of what Lang did.
What you just described to me, I think that defines exactly what I said a few moments ago. Andrew Dice Clay is a caricature created by Andrew.
Yeah.
Lang, that's what he is.
Yeah.
That's just scary. Anyway. Yeah,
exactly.
So this week's book again is?
The Filthy Truth by Andrew Dice Clay, published by Touchstone Books, and it's $32.50.
And how can people find you, sir?
Well, not in the comedy clubs of New York and L.A., that's for sure. If they can find me in the Montreal Times, that's where. In print, every Saturday, or online at www.mtltimes.ca.
Thank you very much, sir.
Hey, you're welcome, Peter. Oh!
Stuart Nolman with another edition of Book Banter, here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about out of racetrack on this edition of the Stuff File program. We have just one single solitary item to go. And you know what that is, boys and girls? Yes, yes, you do. On a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio, it's time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
A man tried to chew off his fingerprints in an attempt to not be identified by Lee County Sheriff's deputies. It started with a traffic stop on SR 82. Detectives noticed a 2015 Mercedes that had been reported stolen. Detectives learned that the driver of the Mercedes, identified as Kenzo Roberts, was using a fake ID, had a concealed firearm, and possessed three fraudulent credit cards. While Roberts was in the back of a patrol vehicle, he tried to remove his own fingerprints by chewing them off. A fingerprint scanner identified Roberts and showed two felony warrants for his arrest out of Broward County for aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. Roberts was charged with possession of counterfeit credit cards, grand theft auto, possession of a concealed firearm, possession of fake driver's licenses, driving with a suspended license, because they always have a suspended license in these stories, and giving law enforcement false identification. Border Patrol was contacted, and authorities learned Roberts is also a U.S. illegal. I'll just keep this one short and sweet, okay? What kind of person thinks they can chew off their fingerprints in the back of a patrol car? One kind, and one kind only, an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0311. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0311. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. No animals were harmed in the production of this program, except, of course, the tasty ones. Good night and pass the paprika.